This is The Guardian.
I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story. For 44 years, no one from Australia has won a singles title at the Australian Open. On Saturday, that changed. This achievement caps an incredible few years for the world number one 25-year-old Ash Barty. But she wasn't the only person that made history at the tournament.
Thanasi Kokkinakis and Nick Kyrgios.
Today, the rise of Ash Barty and the changing face of the Australian Open. It's Wednesday, the 2nd of February.
Here I am just walking into Rod Laver Arena for the women's final. It's all about Ash Barty here.
Emma Kemp is Deputy Sports Editor at Guardian Australia. So Emma, you've been at the Australian Open over the past few weeks. You were at the women's singles final on the weekend. What was it like there on the ground before the match kicked off?
It was insane. I mean, it wasn't quite the goosebump feeling that I had at the end, but there was so much anticipation in the air.
I'm just coming out into the stadium and it looks more than 80% full, that's for sure.
I was sitting on the other side of the player benches, sort of in the corner, which was actually not that far from the players' boxes. So it was, you could see the reaction from each of their boxes, coaches, etc.
I've got to say, I feel pretty jealous hearing this. How close to the court were you?
I think maybe probably 10 metres, 20 metres.
So, Em, at the final and also throughout the whole Open, really, it seems like Barty mania had just taken hold. People were wearing Barty T-shirts, bringing Indigenous flags to the game. I also watched most of her games, even though I'm not really a tennis fan at all. How common is it to see this type of hype when it comes to women's tennis in Australia?
Not very often recently. Obviously, you know, back in the day, Yvonne Goolagong-Cawley was around, Margaret Court. Well, we know that she's quite controversial, to say the least. But it's been a long while since we've had this sort of, this heroine who we can look up to. We've had a lot of sort of local heroes in terms of men. But as a woman, not quite so much. So, yeah, it's been a long time coming, I think.
Before we get into everything that happened at the Australian Open, I want to wind back quite a bit on the Ash Barty story. Can you tell me a bit about her and where she came from?
Yeah, so she grew up in Springfield, which is a suburb of Ipswich, sort of west of Brisbane. She said she didn't want to play netball like her two older sisters because she thought it was a bit of a girl's sport, so she tried tennis. And when she was about four, her parents took her to her junior tennis coach, Jim Joyce, and he agreed to have a look at her, but he doesn't usually like taking on kids until they're about seven or eight. He just thinks that four's a bit young, but apparently he had a hit with her and her hand-eye coordination and focus was just so good that he agreed to take her on. And basically from there, she said in a couple of interviews, she found an old wooden racket in the shed and basically stood in front of the exterior brick wall of her living room and just hit balls against the wall every day after school for hours. Like, apparently it just drove her parents mental. And then, you know, she sort of went on the tours. She hit the international tours at about 14. So, look, it was clear pretty early on that she was, you know, a real talent. And even Yvonne Goolagong-Cawley, who, of course, is tennis royalty and an Indigenous woman, just like Ash, 14-time Grand Slam champion.
She made me proud from the first time I saw Ash, and she must have been about 13.
She is basically Ash's idol, and they've sort of had this really beautiful blossoming relationship.
Oh, she's got it. She's going to be our next champion. So look at her now.
Tell me about Ash's Indigenous heritage. She has made a point of it, right, speaking about it and being very proud of it.
So Ash's Indigenous heritage comes from her great-grandmother, and she's made a point of supporting Indigenous tennis. She's been Tennis Australia's Indigenous Tennis Ambassador since 2018, and she's often speaking about how proud she is of this heritage. You know, for example, during her first match at the Aussie Open, in a post-match interview, there was this really lovely moment where she gave a shout-out.
I'm a proud Ngarrigu woman, a very, very proud Indigenous woman, and... I love my heritage. I love to celebrate my heritage. It's what connects me to all of you here today. It's what connects me to the land. And I think it's just a beautiful way to express who I am. It's a beautiful way to stay connected with so many people and First Nations people around Australia.
Sema, I know that Ash's career wasn't always smooth and was actually nearly cut short. Can you tell me about what happened early in her career?
So she had all the ingredients of a champion from a very early age, but all of those tournaments and that travelling when she was a teenager just took its toll and she'd had enough. So in 2014, Buddy made the decision to take a break from tennis. She's said since that she was pretty emphatic about the fact that she was quitting tennis. She didn't ask the WTA to keep her ranking, which she could have had the option to do. So it was very much a clear decision that she was done. And she did have a case of depression for quite a while. Her dad, Robert, has said that he's passed on his genes to her. He's bipolar, and she just took some time out to recalibrate, I think. And I think that that was, in a sense, sets a bit of a precedent for mental health being, you know, a top priority in sport, and certainly in tennis as well. You know, we've seen that very recently with Naomi Osaka.
So after more than a year away from the sport, she returned in 2016 with more support around her. What happened when she returned?
Well, she won her first WTA title and then she jumped up the rankings, like she fired up the rankings to number 17. And the rest is kind of history from there. She, all of a sudden, people started realizing just how good she could be. I mean, they already knew it, but there was a real sense of she has Grand Slam titles in her. In 2019, of course, we know she won her first Grand Slam singles title at the French Open, and that was pretty much, I mean, that was a really big year for her. She overtook Naomi Osaka to become number one for the first time that June, and she has held that position ever since.
I know 2020 was basically a non-event for tennis and for a lot of sport, but what about 2021 and the whole lead up to the Open this year? What did that look like for Buddy?
Yeah, 2021 was sort of when she came back. She had the whole of 2020 off, as a lot of players did. She managed to keep her number one ranking because there was sort of a moratorium on rankings because of COVID. 2021, of course, she won Wimbledon exactly 50 years after Yvonne Goolagong won it. And just a few weeks later in Tokyo, she went and lost to the first round. So it was a little bit of a letdown, but, you know, you got to give her cut her some slack at some point, I guess. She'd just come off such a major champion. Her body hadn't been in a good space before she won that Wimbledon title. She didn't even know really if she was going to be able to play. After the Olympics, she went on to the US Open, but she lost in the third round to Shelby Rogers, which was a bit of a letdown for her. But still, she ended the year in the number one spot. So three consecutive years, that makes her just the fifth female player ever to be crowned as world number one at the end of 3 years. So because of that, there was a lot of expectation on her in the Aussie Open this year. You know, that 44 years, everybody in Australia pretty much has heard the 44-year phrase because no one has won it since 1978 when Chris O'Neill, of course, won it at Kooyong. And, you know, this home pressure that Australians feel playing in the Open here is infamous. It's notorious. And there was a sense that this is Barty's time, but there was equally a sense that she's made it to quarterfinals and semifinals in recent years. And, you know, it's ended there. So there was definitely no certainty going into this tournament.
Let's get into the Australian Open then. How did things kick off for Barty in the first few matches?
Well, she sort of gave the impression that we actually had nothing to worry about because she just went out and eviscerated all of her opponents. Lesia Shirenko was up first.
Straight set, 6-love, 6-1.
She played Italian player who's a big hitter, Lucia Bronzetti. Then she basically plowed through a bunch of Americans all the way to the final. So she got Amanda Anisimova, Jessica Pegula. Pegula actually took two games off her, which was very rare this tournament. And, you know, she only... Some of the stats at this tournament are just incredible, like the fact that she only conceded three breaks on her serve. So her service game numbers were just incredible. In the semi-finals, there was a bit of uncertainty about whether or not she would have it over Madison Keys, and this was the furthest that she'd been at the Australian Open before, so we were sort of wondering about the pressure with that. Of course, she went out and beat her 6-1, 6-3, so there was a sense at that point that she was on this unstoppable run.
I mean, I love this tournament. I love coming out here and playing in Australia. And as an Aussie, we're exceptionally spoiled that we're a Grand Slam nation. We get to play at home. We get to play in our backyard. And I'm just happy that I get to play my best tennis here. I enjoy it. I've done well before. And now we have a chance to play for a title. It's unreal.
Right. So, as we know, you were there, the final match. Tell me about it. How did it play out?
She came out to crazy applause. The stadium was 80% full. It looked like it was at capacity. She won the first set pretty easily, and we just thought she's just going to wrap it up from here. There was this real feeling that it was basically a formality that she was going to claim that second set. As we know now, she went down 5-1 in that second set, which was really uncharacteristic for her. So, of course, then the narrative starts playing out. The curse is struck again. You know, it's only a matter of time. You ride that whole emotional roller coaster with her. It's going to go to three sets. She's going to lose. We're going to have to say next year it's the 45th year since someone's won the Australian Open. So she was down 5-1. She managed to claw her way back to 5-all, and then it was 6-all, and then we went to a tiebreak. And from there on, it was just kind of, you know, the train had left the station. She wasn't looking back, and she ran away with it 7-2, and it was all over. She'd done it.
As we've discussed, the relationship between Ash and Indigenous tennis great Yvonne Goolagong-Cawley is well known. She's her idol. Buddy paid tribute to her in Wimbledon wearing a similar outfit to what Yvonne wore when she had won it 50 years before and, you know, spoke about wanting to make Yvonne proud. Can you tell me about what happened in the trophy ceremony?
What happened was exactly the opposite of what we were expecting to happen, because all week there had been speculation, will Yvonne be there? And she'd made a point of saying, no, I can't get there. I'll be watching on TV. None of us thought she was going to be there until just before the speeches during the trophy presentation.
We've waited a long time to be able to crown a home hero here at Melbourne Park.
There was sort of a moment where the announcer said, right, we've got one last surprise for you. We hadn't clicked at that point until he started reading out, you know, 14-time Grand Slam winner. There was a light bulb moment where we went, okay, this is happening.
And it is my pleasure to ask Yvonne Goolagong-Cawley to present the Daphne Akhurst Memorial Trophy to our champion at the Australian Open 2022, our women's singles champion, Ash Barty.
And I don't really have words to describe what it felt like when she walked out. The crowd was cheering her just as much as they had cheered Barty when she actually won in that moment. And I was borderline emotional. You're not supposed to get emotional as a journalist, but, I mean, we all had goosebumps. It was literally that much of a visceral feeling. It was just in the air. It was everywhere. Everybody was borderline shaking. It was just, it was incredible. And Ash is, you know, she's really understated with her emotions. So that you're like, oh, she's not cheering, she's not crying. But you could see the surprise on her face. She clearly didn't know.
There was this amazing moment as Yvonne came out to join the trophy ceremony, and it cut to Kathy Freeman in the crowd, kind of like an auntie trying to get a good photo of the moment. I posted on Twitter, I just posted the words, Ash, Yvonne, Kathy, and thousands of people responded just because of this moment, you know, three Indigenous greats just there supporting each other. It was really special.
Sometimes you have to stop and say, I'm witnessing history right now, because those moments pass you by, especially when you're a journalist and you're sort of just concentrating on, you know, your copy and what you're going to file and changing things very quickly at the end. So it can pass you by and you don't realise. But I really made a point of stopping for a couple of minutes and just soaking it all in, because it really was, I think it's going to be one of those sporting moments that goes down in history much in the same way that Kathy Freeman's 2000 Olympics win did.
Mm. I mean, I grew up looking to Kathy Freeman as this Indigenous idol, and, you know, I think we've just witnessed another moment, that myth-making moment, where a lot of young Indigenous girls and a lot of tennis players might feel the same way going forward. It's exciting. Next, the changing face of Australian tennis. This Open and this moment was pretty historic in more ways than one, I think. I mean, tennis in Australia isn't always a national crowd pleaser like AFL. You don't always get the types of interest and attention as this year had, I believe. And also, as we've discussed, most of our champions in the past have been white men in tennis. Do you think that this is a bit of a shift? This is a moment, Emma?
Definitely. We've seen in this tournament that a lot of young and, I guess, more importantly, diverse players have won. I mean, I would say, you know, it would be fantastic just to say that they played or that they got to the quarters or semifinals, but they've actually won. You know, people like Dylan Alcott, who is, you know, Australian of the Year, as we know. He's also a Paralympian and an advocate for people living with disabilities. He last year announced his retirement from tennis, having won 15 Grand Slams. He played and he made the final, and he had probably one of the biggest crowds that he has had during his career, and he's become a very high-profile athlete because of all the work that he does off the court. He is, you know, a very good example of the changing face of tennis. And, of course, we had the special Ks, which were completely unexpected, completely unorthodox.
As many might know by now, the special Ks are the winners of the men's doubles at the Australian Open. What else do we need to know about them?
The special Ks are Nick Kyrgios and Tanasi Kokkinakis, a couple of Australian players, pretty highly ranked in terms of Australia's cohort, been friends since they were kids. Kyrgios is half Malaysian, half Greek, and Tanasi is the son of Greek immigrant parents. So they're representative of Australia, a diverse Australia. It was really interesting throughout their run that the Greek population in Australia, the Malaysian population, was sort of claiming them as their own as well. So there was this real representation there.
You know, I know tennis is known for tradition and certain types of etiquette on the court and off the court. Crowds can be quite quiet. At Wimbledon, people wear all white. I mean, what did we see with the special Ks that was quite different, a departure from this tradition?
Well, they were pretty anti-establishment in terms of, you know, traditional tennis. Tennis is traditionally, it's a bit of an elite sport, you know, middle to upper class people mainly European backgrounds. And so there's, you know, the behaviour matches that sort of demographic, I suppose you'd say, about people who play tennis and who watch tennis. And the Special K very much flew in the face of that. They played on Kia Arena, which is sort of, I guess it turned out to be the week two equivalent of John Cain Arena, which is the Kyrgios court. And everyone was there, you know, snaking around the stadium, trying to get in for a seat to watch them put on a show. You know, Kyrgios comes out and he's all swagger and pomp, and, you know, he squirts a water bottle between security guards' legs and he pumps up the crowd. He takes the piss out of his opponents, which is partly why they're so controversial. You know, they finish a match and they win it and he's just swearing on the court on live TV. Kokkinakis is telling the crowd, sink piss and come here. That was probably the winning quote of the tournament, to be honest. And, you know, obviously the way I'm talking about it, I really enjoyed it and I found it really refreshing. And I think a lot of Australians did and a lot of people all over the world did, but it was quite divisive because they broke all the rules.
I've had this debate with a few people over the past few days, with some saying that crowds, booing and rude comments from players are not okay, and others saying it's actually really exciting because it's a sign that this sport is reaching a different audience. What do you think, Emma?
I feel conflicted about it, and I guess maybe that's how a lot of people feel, because I think in some instances the crowd was genuinely deplorable in the way that they acted and, you know, they lacked sportsmanship. And it wasn't fair. And I think Kyrgios has a tendency to, I don't like the way that he mocks his opponents. But then at the same time, what they are doing for that sport, and they are producing this entertainment, and they know that's what they're doing, and they're hamming it up. And regardless of everyone's conflicted feelings about it, people wanted to watch him, which I guess is the point. And the boys knew that and they were playing on that fact. And the TV ratings were through the roof, you know, during their semi-final. They didn't start on Nine's main channel, but soon they'd kicked Nadal off the main channel so that we could watch the third set. You know, it was just, I mean, that's virtually unheard of. And they became the main show. They became centre court, even though they weren't on centre court.
What is it about you two guys that makes you so dangerous, that's got you to this point, that makes everyone here love this so much? What do you think it is?
I think we're unpredictable, and I think that's why they enjoy it.
It's so interesting because, you know, I watched the Australian Open for the first time because of Ash Barty. There are a lot of Indigenous people following along, tweeting, you know, just excited to see this representation. And then you see a whole other crowd of people maybe watching tennis for the first time, watching the Special Ks. Surely some of that has to be good, that we have a new face of tennis and a new fan base coming along with them.
Kyrgios actually sort of articulated that in one of his post-match press conferences when he said, you know, these peripheral fans or these people who aren't fans, they switch on this tennis match and all of a sudden they're tuning back in and they're watching the rest of the tennis and you've got them hooked.
My goal is to only bring new fans that may not be following tennis to watch tennis.
So something that really encapsulated this sentiment occurred after their semi-final win when they were doing their on-court interview, and Kyrgios was asked a pretty pertinent question.
I'll let you guys go because it's hot out here, but do you guys see this as the future of tennis? Do you see that's where we're going? We've seen Netflix on site this tournament, you know, that there's a whole different fan base we're trying to bring to the sport. Do you see this as being the future?
It has to be.
Thanasi Kokkinakis and Nick Kyrgios.
That was Emma Kemp, Deputy Sports Editor at Guardian Australia. You can read all of our coverage at the Australian Open at theguardian.com, including Emma's piece, All Conquering Ash Barty Remains Humble Despite Joining Greats in Exclusive Club. That piece goes into a bit more detail about Ash's game and why she's a formidable player, but also looks at the reason Ash and others believe there's still room for improvement for the world number one. We've linked to that on the full story page. This episode was produced by Jake Morecambe, Laura Briley-Newton, Ellen Liebeater, and Camilla Hannon, who also did the sound design and mixing. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni, Gabrielle Jackson, and me, Laura Murphy-Oates. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you next time.